Blog Talk Radio.
This is a special edition of Night Zone Radio Live. Welcome to the shadows of the Night Zone.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, madam and messieurs, boys and girls, mes enfants. Welcome to a special Thursday edition of
Night Zone Radio.
Tonight, we have back with us the master of Planet X Forecast, Marshall Masters. Before we chat with Marshall, a special shout out to the Blog Talk Radio team who will be with us tonight to analyze any issues such as the ones we experienced with Nita Hickok on the last show. And other affiliate shows apparently are experiencing the same thing, and the Blog Talk Radio team are diligently working on its solution. We welcome the research team from VOCR Politics 101 in the radio audience tonight, and thanks to all of you, your assistance in bringing quality programming to
BlogTalkRadio.com. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, caveat emptor.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
Tonight, Unplugged with Marshall Masters. In the early 1990s, the United States Naval Observatory confirmed the orbital agitation of Pluto and various planets, calculating that a tenth planet would have to be 2 to 5 times the size of Earth and performing an elliptical orbit which extends some 5 billion miles beyond that of Pluto. This would be an elliptical orbit maintaining gravitational pull on our entire planetary system. We certainly can and have measured the gravitational pull it exerts on the planetary systems, and we've known this since 1930s. Tonight, we have with us an old friend and author of Planet X Information, host of Cut to the Chase,
Marshall Masters.
Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope.
Marshall Masters. Your host, Colin Knight.
And here we are on a special edition Thursday evening of the Night Zone. It is Thursday, September the 16th, 2010. Next week, we'll drop back into our normal Tuesday slot. Because of business commitments, we had to move the show. Nothing we could do about it. I'd like to give weekly shout-outs to Veronica in Hawaii, who emailed the show and suggested about paranormal stories from the islands. And we do thank you. And by the way, happy birthday, Veronica. We have passed your information on to research, and we'll see what comes up with that. Jim in Edmonton, Alberta, glad you enjoyed the show. Keep listening. And remember, tell 2 friends, you know, yada, yada, yada. And Sandy in Montreal, très bien, mon ami. Merci beaucoup. Vive le Canada. And Dr. Dean from Bristol, England. Thank you for your reference assistance, sir. We appreciate when guests participate. And, of course, let's not forget Miss Brick and Mortar 28. Are you following me? Did you just see me in BC? Speaking of British Columbia, special shout-out to AR. And, of course, you, the listener audience. Keep your emails coming, everyone. The Night Zone at gmail.com. Tonight's pause for thought is the U.S. government administration wants the public to start using the term global climate disruption in place of global warming, fearing that the latter term oversimplifies the problem and makes it sound less dangerous than it really is. So that was my PSA announcement of the night. We are now replacing global climate disruption we are taking global warming away and replacing it with global climate disruption. Now get your head around that one and listen for the mainstream media jumping onto the bandwagon and changing the flavor of that kick. Tonight, in the Night Zone, the Master of Planet X forecast, Marshall Masters of Planet X. And I got to tell you, good evening, Marshall. It's an absolute pleasure to have you with me tonight.
It's good to be back, Colin. Always enjoy being on your show.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you coming at short notice. Hey, the reason the short notice was regarding the actions that are starting to happen around our planet. We're starting to see some topsy-turvy stuff happening, especially with the sun and the CME pukes that it's been dishing out of late. And I got an email from a mutual friend from Andy from the UK, from the Dark Star. He sent me a feed regarding CMEs and the like, and there's a sun storm expected with a force of 100 megaton bombs. You know? I mean, this is nuts.
Well, it's what's happening. Folks are coming to it kind of Johnny-come-lately and sorting it out. I mean, on one hand, you look out, the sky is blue, the weather's relatively nice, it's been a hot summer. But folks, to make that leap from that to something more catastrophic is really hard for them. But this is something that the government has been actually very consistent about since 2008. Back then, I mean, one of my videos, I have Nishi Yukaku, who's a rather delightful fellow. I really enjoy watching his programs, and because he's just not afraid to tackle anything. He went on Fox News and said, hey, you know, we got it wrong with 2012. It's going to be a lot worse than what we said. Well, the Fox News entertainer, I don't call them reporters. There aren't no more reporters in cable news anymore. They're all entertainers. I mean, their first job is to sell credit cards and tampons for the advertisers, let's be honest. And so he just chalked it up and said, well, it's just 2012 nonsense. And that was it. And Nishi Yukaku, that was really humiliating for this man. I mean, he goes on, makes a statement that's very bold. The kind of thing that you would hope scientists with integrity would come forward and say. And he does that, and he's mocked and ridiculed. This is a constant problem. Not only are people dealing with their own cognitive dissonance of what's happening around them. Cognitive dissonance is just a convenient way to say, don't confuse me with facts. I've already made up my mind. And so he's having to buck that. But you know, the one thing of the media that you should rightfully expect is that they're not going to fall prey to that, that they'll rise above that base instinct and go for the understanding, the explanation, get the story. No interest there. And so he just was, you know, humiliated. And yet, when it comes back, everything he said was absolutely, boom, spot on, right on the money.
Is it because we're scared of the truth? Is it the old adage, we can't handle the truth? Or NASA have been watching this storm since 2006, and they're finally releasing that this storm could hit Kelsey Freeze 2012-2013. Now, why has this information not been front and center as President Obama restructures NASA? I don't understand that.
Well, I mean, first off, the natural tendency of the public when it comes to really drastic news like this is, you know, to regress to childhood. You know, remember when you were a little fella and you just said, gee, if I keep the closet door closed and I hide under my blanket, the monsters can't get me because they can't see me. And it might sound corny, but that's really what it's all about. That is the form of cognitive dissonance. And so how do you break bad news like that to a public? When do you break that bad news? And those are thorny issues. To me, though, I see that they're not really trying to wrestle with that. There's a different agenda in place, which is something more akin to, you know, everyone is coming at this from a dog-eat-dog point of view. And, the survival of the fittest logic. And the fittest, of course, are entitled to understand what's happening in the world, and those that do not are obviously not the fittest, so I'll let them go. And that's really pretty much why this is happening and rolling out the way it is. But what I will tell you is the topic still the same is viral and it's strong. And when you would think by rights, it should be dying and on its last legs. No, it's not. It's as active as it ever was and growing.
You see, I come at this from a different perspective. Now, you have got you understand media better than most people on radio. You know, you've been there, you've worked within it. So, you know, you have that inside track, so to speak, whereas I don't. But I come at this problem, regarding 2012 just a little differently. The fact that the greatest minds in the world have access to the President of the United States of America and vice versa. Now, if, in fact, 2012, a meteorite, a planet, or whatever was coming in, would you not think that our president in the past would have set in place a motion that we would have focused our attention at defeating that? Because, I mean, if 2012 is it, then what stops President Obama tomorrow declaring martial law and just getting the job done as he thinks it has to be done? I mean, I don't quite understand how the government can stay in that ignored mode. I don't get that, Marshall.
Well, you're underestimating the power of special interests. Look at the BP oil spill. What happened there? You saw BP is, that's it. They're the big kid on the block. And even the White House had a kowtow to them. You saw time and again where, and I was seeing a lot of reports from independent documentary producers, but you also saw on CNN and MSNBC, and you saw the networks reporting that they were not getting access to the beach areas. They were being held off, and not by law enforcement officials. They were being denied access to public lands by private goons of BP who had the full force and authority of local peace officers. So what you have there is an immense amount of power. And I think that for people to really understand what is happening politically, because we have a disconnect. On one hand, people, you ask them, do you trust your government? You know, I mean, in America, Congress has, well, I don't know, it's about as close to zero of a confidence rating as you're going to get. Elsewhere in the world, it's the same. And people are skeptical about their governments, and here we're more skeptical than ever before. And so we expect them to lie to us. We expect them to be used by special interests to take advantage of us. But on something like this, this big, we have this magical leap of confidence that comes out of nowhere to say, well, this they wouldn't lie to us about. This is too big to lie to us about. And, I mean, the difference there is a man who cheats on his wife, and he lies about cheating, but of course he's going to be honest about all the other children he's fathering out of the marriage. No, if he's cheating and he's fathering children, you're the last to know. Same thing here. And in the movie 2012, and a nice thing about it is, I mean, it's on Netflix now. You can actually get it on instant view. Watch the movie. I mean, the scenario is Hollywood, all right, period. But one of the things Emmerich does, because this guy is really rebellious, is he embedded in that film a subtext. He's actually telling the audience, if they will take the time to watch the movie a second or third time, he's explaining to them exactly how the elites and the governments work together on this. And the net result is that the people that are going to do the dying are not going to understand what's happening until when the day comes they're dying. And that is by intent. It is so that in a survival of the fittest, elites and their minions can decide that they represent those that should survive. And they're much better off. Their odds of surviving are significantly enhanced if there's fewer people to compete with them for the same resources. And that's what it really boils down to. Also, they're preparing for afterwards as well.
Right. Does this go in line with the theory that a quarter of the world's population would be the perfect population for the Earth? Is that kind of where you're coming from on that regard?
Well, actually, if you look at the Georgia Guidestones, which is considered to be a Freemason monument built in America some few decades ago, and it's in 10 different languages or 11 different languages. It has 10 commandments, and in those 10 guides, if you will, but it's basically 10 commandments for the 21st century. First one says keep the population at 500 million. All right, doesn't say lower it to 500 million. It says keep it at 500 million, or in other words, once population starts to come back, do not exceed this figure. So what you're really looking at is if we're saying, fine, we have 7.5 billion souls, and actually that's much more now, we're pushing towards 8. But, you know, it really depends on what side of the decimal point you're going to be on. You know, you're going to be to the left or to the right of the decimal point. And it's just as easy as that. So when you're looking at the Emmerich's hidden subtext in 2012, he's telling you, here's the difference between the people that are on the right side of the decimal point and the people that are on the left side of the decimal point. And I think that is something people need to keep in mind. You know, we're looking at something where it's almost a convenient dieback event. Now, it doesn't need to be as catastrophic as it will be. It doesn't. It's not necessary that all of the people that will perish from this are going to perish. But this is, you know, this is just something that is elites just deciding, well, there's an optimal population, and here's how we want to keep things, and here's how we're going to manage resources. They're planning to keep control afterwards. Right now, our economy is based on petrodollars. Well, after 2012, petrodollars are going to be irrelevant. So what's going to be the new basis commodity for whatever currency comes at that time? Well,
right.
Look at Svalbard. All right? Look at the seed bank in Svalbard. Look at who is backing that. You have Bill Gates, Monsanto. You know, you have a group of companies that are already making a bloody fortune off of genetically modified foods. Now, are they putting their genetically modified seed stock in Svalbard? No, because genetically modified seed stock is garbage. It does not produce as well as natural organic seeds, heritage seeds. It's designed to be a one-crop, you know, bozo. That's it. You plant it once, and you can save seeds, but all you can do is just cook them for porridge.
But what the heck is that place called? Isn't there a seed bank in Norway now where they have they've protected all seeds?
That's
from
Svalbard.
Is that Svalbard? But is that modified, genetically modified, or I thought that was
no GMO. No, they're taking all the GMO from around the world. They're taking all the heritage seeds from all around the world.
Right.
And that's what they're collecting, and that's what they're saving. So this is something where look at it from a very simple, practical basis. You know, kind of wipe away the people want to come at this with wishful thinking, and I really wish that they could just see it through the eyes of a child, because then you would just see what is actually there. All right. They're going to have all of these heritage seeds. The rest of the planet's going to be devastated and defoliated. And it's real simple after that. If you want to eat, you want access to those seeds, you want to rebuild your agriculture, you're going to have to play ball. you're going to have to suck up and sign where they tell you to sign and pay what they tell you to pay. That's what their plan B is for dominating in the world after the post-historic.
So they would control your ability to repopulate, regrowth the food source.
Yeah. Well, they're going to be the only game in town.
So,
all right.
So
where else are you going to find heritage seeds? Unless people right now are doing what some folks are doing. And there's quite a few of them. You know, I mean, the person that really educated me on this a few years ago was Miriam Delicato. And once she really opened my eyes to this, because she's really, really, you know, pushing people to say, get these heritage seeds. And it's getting more difficult. If you live in the United States and you want to order Viagra from Canada, you can get all you want. Thank you, please. If you want heritage seeds, no. The FDA will stop it at the border. They can't ship it.
And why would that
Why is it I can't get Canadian carrots, but I can get Prozac or whatever else I want out of Canada?
Right. Isn't that interesting? Okay. Yeah, you're absolutely correct on that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's their planning. But also, I tend to look at things where this is an event that is going to dwarf the best laid plans. You know, Japan was absolutely certain that when they hit Pearl Harbor, they'd take America out of the war and they'd finally be able to forge a peace and keep their possessions, and it didn't work out that way. All right? And they wound up getting ground to pieces. Yeah,
right.
So the best laid plans of mice and men.
True. I just want to go back to this CME events that are planned in the future, that are anticipated. You know, I don't
they're
think
not
people...
Planned. They're not planned.
Well, you
but
know
they're
what I mean.
Anticipated.
I
mean, yeah.
Well, they're planned by the universe, right?
Yeah, I go with that, yep.
Yeah, but, you know, what I don't get is why people are not paying as much attention as they should. I mean, airlines could be taken down, communication could go, you know. Anybody that works with GPS systems would be pooched, circuit breakers would trip, satellites would fall out of orbit. I mean, the emergency services would be chaos. And we'd be vulnerable. Internationally, we'd be vulnerable. And I'm just shocked at the lack of interest or concern from the average Joe Q public.
Well, the Joe Q public, as long as they're getting what they want to get, they're good to go with it. You know, this is a consumer society, so we have to, you know, you have to deal with that level. I'm not saying to be judgmental, all right? I'm not trying to proselytize people with, you know, coming around and looking at the research. I don't do that because I believe that it's a great disservice to people to actually proselytize. You know, go out and say, you need to do this, you need to look at that, you need to... No. Everybody comes to this in their own way, their own time. And if you push them, then all you're doing is you're throwing additional barriers in front of them that were not there before, so you're actually doing a disservice to them. But this is something where, again, there are people who are in awareness, and then there are people who are not. And the people that are in awareness are very, 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 very small percentage of humanity. And they are... You know, this is something in a video that I produced, I think, since the last time I was on with you, called The Five Stages of Catastrophism. And
right.
I identified them. And so, you know, 98% of the people really just look at this and go, nah, it's not my cup of tea, and they just go on down the road. Then you have folks that look at it. Once you ask the question, well, what exactly am I looking at? That's when you start moving towards the topic. And people will, at that point, look at it enough to know that if they go any further, their worldview is going to be significantly changed. And for a lot of folks, that's a very fearsome thing, and so they stop right there. They'll go out to the edge of their belief system, look over to see what they see, but if it's a little bit unnerving for them, they'll race right back to the center of their belief system and crazy glue their butt to it. Boom.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, you have folks that understand this is a different world.
Right. Down in the virtual studio, I have one of our listeners said, the powers know something is up. Why else are all the underground facilities being built? And I think that's in reference to Area 51 apparently has now become such a vast installation that in order for their janitors to get around, they have to drive golf carts. So apparently this is a huge facility under the ground at Area 51 that we may never know what's going on there.
Facilities are worldwide.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, you can walk through the Denver airport and see signs of this stuff. So,
right.
I mean, it's out there. The thing of it is are you the word that people in government use, all right, I mean, as a researcher, independent researcher, someone taking an enlightened spiritual view of this, we talk in terms of awareness.
Right.
When you're dealing with governments, they use the term perceptive. And, you know, perceptive means that you could walk into a room and be completely oblivious to everything that's going on. You just see one thing and that's what you want. A perceptive walks into that same room, and by the time they finish walking from one end of the room to the other, they know exactly where everything is, you know, and what they can use if they need to grab onto something for a weapon. I mean, they've already thought all that in just the amount of time that you take a few idle steps. So a perceptive, in other words, is they are in a material state of awareness. They are aware of what is happening in the world around them. So there's these two different levels that we work at. Most people just simply are neither in awareness nor are they in a state of perception that they're being perceptive. They just go along. Now, when do they become into awareness? When do they have perception? Usually it's when something happens to them. All right. And then at that point, you know, you could watch on television somebody else suffering through a horrible flood, a hurricane, an earthquake, something like that, and you want to send them your $20 through Red Cross. But then it happens to you. And it's a whole different dynamic. And that's when the blinders come off and you see the world differently. You have a different paradigm view. And so that's really, you know, we have a society where we work inside comfort zones. And we seek to find a comfort zone. And once we're inside that comfort zone, that's it. You know, we just put it on cruise control and lay back and, you know, listen to Benny and the Jets. That's how we live it. On the other hand, the folks that are coming to this have, for one reason or another, and usually what I say is, you know, you've come to this because you walk straight backwards into it. But once you do, once the blinders come off, and that's a very difficult process, the reason why I did 5 stages of catastrophism, to help people get through it, but a lot quicker than I did. And if you move through that, then you change the dynamic. One of the things I will hear from people initially, and they'll say, well, gee, if it's going to be this bad, why not just die? All right? And that is ego talking. That's somebody talking about the me, 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 and that's where they're coming from. Surviving this, there's a lot of reason for people to survive it. It's really important. This is going to be the most important evolutionary event in the history of our species. This is going to be the make-or-break event. We are either going to evolve as a result of this. It is going to be a painful evolution. Let me be frank about that. But we will evolve. And if we do it as we have failed to do it in the past, because this is not the first time humanity has been at this point, but if we do it, then we will then get through this, and the population that is left standing after this will be the most important population of humans in the history of our species, because they're the ones that are going to pick up the pieces, look at everything, and say, okay, now we need to get off this planet.
Right.
They're going to understand the fragility of life as we have never known it before, and it's going to bring them together.
And speaking of getting off this planet, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll head back to Planet X. What do you think?
All right. I'm game.
All right. Yeah, I'm game too. Yeah, it'll sound like fun. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Night Zone Radio on BlogTalkRadio.com. I know thy works. Behold, I have set before thee an open door, and no man can shut it. For thou hast a little strength, and hast kept my word, and hast not denied my name.
The biblical significance of the number goes back to the book of Revelations and its description of the Antichrist. Verse 18, if anyone has insight, let him calculate the number of the beast. For it is man's number. His number is 666.
Relatively dormant compared to earthquakes that are going on in Indonesia and Japan and other places. On the western side of the Ring of Fire in the Pacific, the eastern ring, which is us, Canada and American West Coast, are definitely going to see more seismic activity.
And if you don't mind me going off track a little bit, there's a strong male spirit behind you with a really good personality for sure. Strong personality that's behind you tonight, Colin.
Destiny comes to those who listen, and fate finds the rest. So learn what you can learn, do what you can do, and never give up hope.
The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, KVMTOR.
Let the future tell the truth and evaluate each one according to his work and accomplishments. The present is theirs. The future for which I have really worked is mine.
347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. In the Night Zone with Colin Knight.
Not much question at all, but there's life throughout the universe. We're not alone in the universe at all. No, for sure we're not alone.
Fly by the comets, visit asteroids, visit the moon of Mars. There's a monolith there, a very unusual structure on this little potato-shaped object that goes around Mars once in 7 hours. When people find out about that, they're going to say, who put that there? God put it there.
Nostradamus and the Antichrist, code-named Mavis, with John Hogue in the Night.
The ancient Sumerian text, just in a very broad overview, basically tell us that these Anunnaki came from space and landed on the Earth in the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. They began to set up a colony that they called Eden.
We go into chat rooms as Cyvamps, really do go in there with a purpose, stir you up so that they can up the level of energy, you know, sometimes. And there are some that come in the room, and you know, they are just negative people. That's all there is, and they don't understand that they're draining the room. But the Cyvamps themselves, yes, they actively seek out their prey.
Nostradamus and the Antichrist, code-named Mavis, with John Hope in the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And Marshall's going to shoot me because I stole his opening music tonight. But Marshall Masters from Planet X Forecast is with us. Marshall, you know, just going back to what we were talking about before the break, I understand the New World Order concept and the Illuminati and the likes. As you heard in the break, right at the end, the connection to Anunnaki and the return of Nibiru, And that connection, that seems to get more and more solid as we understand the Torah, the Colburn Bible, and as we move through the understandings of the ancients, there seems to be a correlation in many religions.
Yes. I mean, it's right there. I mean, the Nephilim is mentioned right there in the Bible. So if you're Now, it actually talks about it in the flood story of Noah. So, let me see if I can... I think the thing about, though, is that what we found when we were doing our research, and the interesting part of it with dealing with the ETs, and I've been writing about this for some time. Years ago, I wrote a book about indigo children, indigo ET connection. And I think that we're going to be facing with the ETs nothing different than what we already face here. You have... Now, people that are exploiters and parentals, mentors, and then you have the really nasty exploiters and the ones that look at us like we look at a farm-raised trout. And so others that just simply want to come and steal and take whatever they want, we're going to have to deal with that. That is part and parcel of what's going to happen in the years to come. And that's a lot because of the control structure is going to be weakened by the events, and so they're going to be able to come. And I think at that point, the most important thing is fear, how we manage our own fear. That's going to determine not only how we survive Planet X flyby, but also the resulting visitations and contacts that are going to happen, because they're going to be both. All right, we've got to expect that. The thing is that you have to, and what I'm really trying to convey to people is that, yeah, building a bunker is good. You know, getting all your provision supplies, absolutely. But that's like trying to paddle upstream with one, you know, with your feet in two canoes.
Right.
And what you have to do is, yes, the material preparation is important. But also, you need to be in a state of, well, I call it, this is something I'm working on in my next book, Crossing the Cusp, and I call it the Noah Paradigm. And in the story of Noah, he was a righteous man, and this has a very positive connotation. This is someone who is well-respected, kindly. He is in a state of oneness, really, with what's about him. And this is a natural state that is going to be the survival state, the Noah paradigm. And if people can do that, you know, one of the points I make is that over the years I've talked to whistleblowers, and you know, to a man, they always say the same things. Now I know how Noah felt. And they don't say it to talk about how they're being horribly punished. They lose their careers, their finances, their wives. I mean, they really take a hit. Their health, everything. They're not saying it for that. They're not saying it for some kind of nah, 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 boy, you're going to see I was right. You know, they're not doing that. Because they've had to make a very difficult decision. You know, do they keep their material comfort and lose themselves, all right? Or do they hold on to themselves and pay the price? And these are the very few that hold on to themselves and they pay the price. And when you're in that position, you begin to think and find connections to the past, and that's where they find a connection to Noah. You know, in the Bible story, it talks about, you know, how all of the people that mocked and ridiculed Noah were then banging on the hull of the ark and pleading, okay, you know, hey, I'm ready for that conversation now. You know, we'll open up the door and let's interact, right?
Right.
And no. Noah's not opening the door. And it's not to punish them for their arrogance. That's what the arrogant would think. All right? First off, so what was Noah's mission? Noah's mission was the preservation of life on the planet. That was Noah's mission. And Noah would have known if he had opened the doors and he let those people that were treading water and banging on the hull of the ark, let them in, that they would quite possibly destroy the mission. Why? Because these people were not mentally, emotionally, or spiritually, or even intellectually ready to deal with what those events were at that point in time. They would come in like a bunch of screaming genies, and once they felt safe, it would start with the whining, the complaining, and the manipulating, and then everything goes down the tubes. All right?
Right.
And so he had to let them drown. And that was a horrible bit of humanity for him. And these whistleblowers who have seen these things, this is the torment that they go through. They can, in their minds, we're out here and we see it's blue skies, the birds are chirping, everything looks cool, you know, Lady Gaga's out there making everyone wah-wah, and you know, life is good, right, supposedly. But in their minds, in a future day, they hear the banging on the hull. They hear the pleading. All right. And they know what that means, and they know what those difficult choices are going to be. And that's really the brutal truth of where this is going. And the rest of it, you know, a lot of people want to say, well, you know, prove to me this, prove to me that, and I go, no, I'm not interested. Because, frankly, that's mental masturbation. It's not going to do anything to help you get moving forward. If you're going to take this seriously, all right, and you say, all right, I'm going to get through this, then it's the point where you have to start doing something proactive today. And yes, it's just as simple as going to, you know, to the box stores and buying yourself a 50-pound sack of beans, things like that. It's a start. You have to start somewhere. You have to start doing something. But also there's the practical things. Right now we have access to good dental care. Now, the last thing you want to be doing is going through a global catastrophe with, you know, with an abscess tooth. You don't want to be having those kind of problems. And so,
prepare, but be smart about it.
Be smart about it. And, you know, no one can fault you if you say, look, I'm going to go to a dentist who specializes in preventative dentistry. And takes a very holistic look at this, and you say to that preventative dentist, I want a 5-year mouth. In other words, I don't want to have any problems with any of the fillings or crowns or anything that's going on in my mouth for 5 years, assuming I just brush my teeth twice a day.
Right.
And that is a smart thing to be doing now. So attending to these things, getting extra eyeglasses. You know, people don't, today, you know, think about it. It's a real simple thing. I don't know if you wear eyeglasses, but everybody that does nowadays likes to get them with this, the anti-glare coating. All right? Well, anti-glare coating is great as long as you've got a kitchen sink and some, you know, dish soap, and that's really how you get your glasses clean every once in a while. It takes that much effort. So you have your emergency glasses, but you don't have them coated with things that are going to make them difficult to clean and take care of. It's these kind of things. And what you have to do is you're not sitting here today and shopping and going through the normal consumer checklist that we're doing. Everything that you buy, you sit down and you think yourself through it. You know, when I wrote Planet X Forecast 2012 Survival Guide, one of the things was, what kind of implements are you going to carry on your body that are things that are really useful? And the one thing I found that was really the best would be a 20-ounce roofing hammer.
I thought you were going to say a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Oh, that's on the other hip. And but, you know, when I was buying that hammer, and I'm going to different stores, and I'm looking at all these different hammers. Because a hammer is something, if it's, you get a roofing hammer, you have the, you can dig with it, you can pound with it, you can fight it, all right? And that's important. It's a self-defense issue. And then at that point, once you start saying, okay, how do I, if I'm going to carry this, schlep this steel around, because bear in mind, you know, we're not going to be able to drive on down the road, or won't be for that far. I mean, whatever you have is what you're going to carry on your body or drag in a cart. And so at that point, you have to think everything through carefully. And, you know, I can imagine when I'm sitting here with these hammers and I'm saying, okay, I'm going to dig and I'm going to this and I'm going to do that and I'm going to fight it. and I'm there doing my kung fu with the hammer in the middle of the store, I could just see somebody up in a security booth going, "Hey, Fred, look at this guy on six. You've got to see this," you know? But, you know, did it anyway. Huh?
You'd go on to the Christmas wheel for the Christmas party, probably. But,
yeah. You know. Yeah. But I'm saying, how do I fight this hammer? How do I defend myself against some crazy that wants to steal my backpack with whatever I have in it, or some animal that's coming at me? And how would I use this hammer to defend myself? And what would make it a good hammer for doing that? Everything you do, you buy, you look for a knife, you're looking at the same issues. You see yourself using it, not today, not buying it today. You see yourself in a future time when it is a life or death issue. And that's the kind of preparation that people need to be doing now. Because one, it's going to give you things that you need, all right? But also, the important thing is the human mind is a neural network computer. It is an incredible piece of wetware. And when you start visualizing yourself in these circumstances, your brain literally has to build neural circuits in order to process that information. And that is the reason why SWAT teams will practice in very, very realistic situations, so that they don't walk into a situation cold turkey and go, "Okay, which end of the gun do we point?" You know, they're going to go in, know exactly what to do, and they're going to go do it. And why?
Now.
Because they visualize that time and time again before the actual event happens. We have to do the
now.
Same things.
Now, with that said, we don't want everybody jumping out of their bedroom windows like a ninja, practicing escape routines and causing attention of the local police departments. This is something that you are practicing in your mind, what you would do if you got to that point and how you would respond. Because response is going to be a knee-jerk reaction, and you won't have time to make a moral compass decision. It will be you or them in one form or another, whether it be the weather, natural causes, or man-made causes. There will be points in time where your decision-making will be split second, and you must try and account for that.
Yes, you do. But at the same time, one of the things I'm starting to tell people is that every morning when this is going on, and you wake up in the morning, the first question you ask yourself is, am I a good person? Some mornings you might not have the answer to that question, so you have to ask it twice that day. But the truth of it is, you cease being a good person when you're no longer willing to ask the question. It's a simple test. It's important. Because the most enduring quality that will get us through it will be our sense of humanity, and noble sense of humanity, being in it for the species. And it's not, you know, Pollyannish woo-woo. This really gets down to what can motivate people to pull through it. You know, if you stop and think about World War II, and it never fails to amaze me, you know, all of these men in the 8th Air Force got in their B-17s and went to Schweinfurt to blow up a ball bearing plant. And there were 30% losses. Hundreds of crew members died. It was such a brutal defeat for the 8th Air Force that they actually had to stop bombing until they could get a long-range fighter, and that was the P-51 that came in. But getting to the point, what on earth motivated those young warriors to get in those machines and to go into that maelstrom? And what did was they had a sense of humanity, a sense of they were in it, they were doing it, they were dealing with an evil situation, they were there to protect their families, their loved ones, and the other men that they were fighting with. And so there are these noble purposes. It's easy for us in a very consumer-driven world to forget that. All right. But that, and yet we still see it. We still see, you know, in the military where they're taking care of their own. They're going out there and they're fighting the enemy, but they're fighting for each other. You know, because the rest of it, it's all divvied up by special interests. So the morality that we went into World War II, we don't have that anymore. But people are still moral. And if it were not for them being moral, be a different situation. So let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. Let's just not say because there's a bunch of guys on Wall Street that are scum-sucking thieves, okay, and they're stealing anything that's not nailed down.
Allegedly.
All right. Allegedly. Oh, give me a break. But I'll give you that.
Allegedly, Marshall, we're supposed to stop at the top of the hour, but because we've done blah blah most of the night, we're going to go 30 minutes long. So we've got 38 minutes on the clock, just so you can reset your timer and get everything right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we are heading for Planet X, I swear. Hang in there.
Shadows of the Night Zone, the master of Planet X Forecast, Marshall Masters. The following program is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The Night Zone is merely the purveyor of information. You, the audience, shall judge the quality of information offered. We remind all of our listeners, KVDMTOR, in the Shadows of the Night Zone, the master of Planet X Forecast, Marshall Masters. 347-324-3287. 347-324-3287. You are in the Night Zone on blogtalkradio.com.
Hey, Night Zoners. Got a couple of seconds? We just wanted to take a moment to thank you for your time and input on the Night Zone show. It is educated, loyal listeners such as yourselves who make this journey much easier. But we do need your help. If you haven't already done so, and we hope you have, take time after the show and go to blogtalkradio.com/nightzone and mark us as a favorite. Remember, Night Zone with a K, Knight Zone. If you listen to past editions through the blogtalkradio.com archive of the Night Zone, please take time to rate the show or comment on its content. Your input guides our journey. Thank you.
Looking to email the show? TheNightZone@gmail.com. Welcome to the Shadows of the Night Zone. Your host, Colin Knight.
And we have with us tonight Marshall Masters. Marshall is the expert of Planet X. God bless him, and we appreciate his input anytime we can get it. Marshall, we contacted each other recently regarding this 4808 incoming video that you found. How old is this video exactly?
Well, this video, actually, there were three videos in 2008 that came out. There were disclosure videos. This came from the SPT. These are the only images of Planet X that I have authenticated. All right, I've never seen anything else. That, yeah, there's a lot of sundog photos, and people send me these all the time. But you know, it's very easy to create these with a cell phone camera because they're just little plastic lenses, and they can distort. But this really goes back to 2006. We broke the story on what's called the South Pole Telescope. It's at the Scott Edmondson Station down in Antarctica. Now, it's an infrared telescope. And because Planet X is in a long period orbit that brings it up from the southern skies, and being that it's beneath us, almost directly beneath the core of the system, then the South Pole Telescope is the perfect place to be observing it, and it's also the perfect instrument to do that. And the reason why is that it's not going to be visible until in the light, you know, in the visible light spectrums, until it's inside the orbit of Jupiter. Excuse me. And it's well below that right now. So
when will that be?
A very, very strong... Hmm?
When will that be? When will we be able to see it?
Well, that is something that is... It's going to be within the next few years. It depends on if it's rising up from beneath us. It's going to be coming in from behind the sun and then swinging down again. So it's difficult to say exactly when and where. You have to, it's in a comet-like orbit that is inclined to the ecliptic. So let me explain that. And this is also, I go into great length about this in a video called Where is Planet X? And you can see it on my youtube.com/yaobooks channel. And it really explains it. I'll just give you a quick summary of that. First thing is that this object is in a part of the sky right now that is extremely dense with a star field. So imagine trying to find one candle at a candlelight vigil where there are thousands of people attending. All right, it's going to be a little rough. That's one. Two is that this object is occluded in a dust disk. It is a brown dwarf. A brown dwarf is a failed star. It has enough mass to ignite, but it doesn't have enough mass to maintain the nuclear furnace like our sun does. And so it's more like a charcoal briquette. When you're out doing your Sunday barbecue, you get it lit, and then it just slowly banks off, right? Well, same thing with the brown dwarf, except on a much grander scale.
Does it have gravity?
This is a massive... It has its own magnetic fields. It's going to have gravity. This is a massive object. And it is, the thing is that we're already seeing that it is perturbing the sun. The sun is more active than in all of our recorded history. NASA is already telling us 2012 is going to be an awful time. And also the, Academy of Sciences, they're doing the same thing. The warnings are coming out there and they are trying to get warnings out. I mean, they're really running up against a lot of the, the public just doesn't want to hear it. They want to hear about Britney Spears. They don't want to hear about that. So that's just the way it is, not judging it, but that is just the way it is. Still the same, though, if you, with an object in an orbit like this, a good way to frame it in your mind is that Hale-Bopp. You remember Hale-Bopp? Remember that, what was that group that they all committed suicide thinking they were going to go into a spaceship in the tail of the comet?
Right, in California.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, it would have to happen in California. And so I live here, so I can take that cheap shot. But the thing here is that they were looking at that, and that was, that was what the media focused on. All right?
Right.
But the interesting thing was that when the comet was on its, it had swung around the sun. It was going out to aphelion. That's its point where it's furthest from the sun in its orbit. It passed within one Venusian distance of Jupiter, approximately, and that is the distance between Venus and the sun. It came that close to Jupiter, and that was enough to reduce its orbital duration by some 40%. So what we know is that when these objects are coming and they're not in a, not like the other planets, they're going nice and trundling in this nice, counterclockwise manner, if we're in the northern hemisphere and looking at it, and going around the sun. I mean, they're like going over and under or under and over. All right, they're going in the opposite directions. And what we know about that from something called the Kozai mechanism, which was discovered in 1962, first observed by Yoshide Kozai, a Japanese astronomer, is that this explains how objects destabilize each other's orbits in space when they're during a flyby like this. And so as this object is coming in, it's extremely fast. It's at a comet speed. So it's tearing through the system. It's highly unstable. It's so unstable that if we were able to take all of the computers in the world and hook them together to form one big HAL 9000, for example, even that would be unable to say with specificity exactly where that thing is going to be at any one given time. It can approximate, say, in this general area, but again, this is a highly unstable object. It can vary in the orbit at any time. So what we have to do is be prepared. What we have to do is say, look, the sun is getting more violent. All of the planets and moons in our system that have an atmosphere, they're showing responses to this. And this object is still, by, you know, our last estimates, approximately 9 astronomical units. Now, Jupiter's 5 astronomical units. So it's almost twice the distance from the sun as Jupiter. And it still has to, you know, traverse half of that distance before it gets into a situation where it lights up and we can actually see it. So between now and then, what we have to do is we have to see it in our intellect, in our imagination, if you will. And we know that it's out there.
But we know, do see 48, but we have seen 4808. I mean, we have, the video is authentic.
And we have seen it. And I think it's what's really important with the DNR video is that both of these, now these were really interesting. This was, these three videos probably did more to shift my research on Planet X than anything else I've come across. And I've really been doing this since 1999. It was a couple of years after we started Yowza.com. I did my first Planet X article. And through all that early time, even through the 2003 non-event with Hazelwood in his book Blindsided, it was pretty much an organic conversation. People were following it. I didn't see a lot of overt manipulation. In 2007, that started changing. We started seeing a lot more of it. And then in 2008, we had these first two videos by the original Nibiru Shock 2012. Now, those were really stellar, and I actually even was able to connect with the original Nibiru Shock 2012. After his first two videos went up, the account was stolen, and, you know, people go, well, you know, so fine, just go to YouTube and get it back, which you can do, provided you go and identify yourself. But if you are an anonymous whistleblower and you do not want your life completely trashed, you don't want to wind up in Siberia for the rest of your life, you're not going to do that. So that original owner, was co-opted, the account was stolen. And, you know, the thing is that when I look at disinformation, planted disinformation, I read it just as easily as, you know, you remember the movie The Matrix, and they could read that stuff going down the screen. You know, it doesn't look like gibberish to them. It was, they could see everything going on. Well, I look at, you know, I look at information and the disinformation out there. I see it just as clearly as you could read Matrix. All right. And because the disinformationalists that are doing this, all right, are technically, if they're going to go out and hit your website, take you down, they're very surgical, all right, because that's just procedural stuff that they can do. They have a script for it. Here's where you go looking, and then you attack it. But when they're actually going in and disrupting dialogues, they have the mentality of petty retail clerks. And you're not going to find somebody who has an enlightened view of the world, that they have artistic insight, that they have a sense of humanity, that they would want to go out and do these awful things that they do. So these are very small-minded people.
And then
they're like buzzards.
They basically made disinformation out of the video, out of 4808.
Well, what they do is with 4808, the third one, the DNR, that one I was lucky because I got a good solid tip, all right, from, you know, the thing of it is there's guys out there with white hats and there's guys with black hats. And they both do the same things. They both use throwdown email accounts. And Hotmail is the number one that they do. Because you can be a dead person and get a Hotmail account. But they go out and they'll occasionally say, this is hot, jump on it. See, number one rule of researching Planet X is genuine Planet X information. Here's the drill. The closer it is to the truth, the faster it disappears.
Uh-huh.
All right?
Yep.
So, you know, when I get a heads up like that, man, I'm on it like white on rice. And boom, I went to the DNR. I downloaded that. And when I first looked at it, I was really not sure if this guy was just copycatting Nibiru Shock 2012. Right. One of the things I did notice was that it came down almost within 24 hours of it going out. YouTube not only took down the video, YouTube closed the account. And because he names names from the South Pole telescope where this imagery came out, and what he was saying in his video is that one of his friends who works down there snuck this out to him and said, you got to prepare. And it's a very good picture of Planet X. Well, when we were looking at that point, we were going under, a disinformation attack because I started working and analyzing the Nibiru Shock video. And I go into it, I download the videos, convert them to AVI, extract the frames, and then I really go in and do a very intense photo analysis on them. And I put myself through college as a wedding photographer, but I was also a photographer in the Army National Guard.
Right.
And I was a photojournalist and worked for the State Adjutant General, and I learned a few things there, too. So I know what I'm looking for, and I'm analyzing it. And all of this imagery, all three of these, there's no Photoshop funny stuff here, nothing like it. This is all genuine stuff. And so what happened was that by reporting on it that way, next thing I knew was the first time in like 7 years since I had started my site, I was under an assault, a character assassination assault that was like nothing I'd ever seen before. And it was all going back to this. And it just was overwhelming at the time. You know,
yeah.
What they were doing was just absolutely outright vicious. And so, consequently, I was a bit distracted with that. And I didn't pay enough attention to the DNR video that I should have. But, you know, I keep that stuff around. And so while I was working on my book, Crossing the Cusp, which is my next one out in a few months, I went back and was revisiting all of that, kind of scrounging around, see if there's something I didn't miss before. And sure enough, boom, this came up. And you know, before I had looked at it, I was getting hammered because of my coverage of Nibiru Shock 2012, and that looked like it could be a possible copycat, so I didn't go any further with it at that point. But when I looked into it this time, it was absolutely there. It shows that the object has a tail. It has satellites. It is definitely not the same kind of imagery or the same imagery that Nibiru Shock provided, so it is corroboration. So we have two sources coming, two anonymous sources sourcing it from the same instrument, South Pole Telescope, and these are obviously not Photoshop hoaxes. And again, I apply the rule that the closer you come to the truth, the faster the evidence disappears. And that's the case with both of these fellows.
Now, the interesting thing about that is round about the same time as you're going through this, a mutual friend of ours, actual mutual guest as well, Andy Lloyd, he hooked me up with Dark Star Planet X. Anyway, one of his members had written about a University of British Columbia professor who had published an online article
that had projected an 800-meter meteor asteroid would hit Antarctica in the fall of 2012. Anyway, his article was up on the website for about 2 days, and then it got taken down. And this member is looking for this article because it has gone off the planet. It is, and this apparently was, let me get this right, the Large Aperture Sublimeter Telescope, or BLAST, at McMurdo Station, Antarctica. And this story disappeared, and we can't validate it or corroborate it. Yet it was out there for 2 days. And the same kind of thing as you're saying, the truer the story, the faster the information disappears.
That's right. The best thing you can do is learn how to use the option save web page complete.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
Snag it. Yeah, snag it first, figure it out later. But it can disappear in front of your eyes. I mean, you're dealing with the level of the disinformation effort and the cover-up effort is absolutely staggering. You have a small army of people that are doing this, and they have resources that are amazing. And they can go and find things very, very quickly. I really was angry with the way that they had treated me, and so I figured out how to get back and create grief for them, and I did. But on the other hand, I realized that they were still beating me when I was doing that. You see, the whole point of disinformation is to get you off track. A miss is as good as a mile. So if they could get me off track by countering their moves against me, which take them a lot less effort than it does for, someone like myself, well, then they're winning. Because what are they doing? They're getting me off track from other things I need to be looking at. But on the other hand, I step back from it, and instead of judging it and moralizing it over it, what you have to do is say, well, what have they got that I don't have? Well, they have resources. They have tools. And more importantly, they are predictable. They profile very easily. And so what I do now is I don't fight disinformation. I don't aggravate over the disinformation, but rather I follow it. These guys are like big red buzzards. You can spot them just like big red buzzards. And if they're circling, whatever's under them is going to be sweet meat. So what you do is you beat feet to the sweet meat, and you get there as fast as you can. And maybe you get yourself some before they go out and have their dinner. And so consequently, by changing the way I respond to that and the way I view that, it's become a very powerful research tool for me. So, the things that I look for specifically, that's trade secret. Okay.
Right. So
what I do now, and they leave me alone more now than they were bothering me. I don't get so much grief from them these days, although they still come out of the woodwork.
Right. So if 4808 was such a threat to them that they created this massive disinformation, and they did, it was quite evident on the internet for sure. And this video was 2006 and released to 2008.
We're talking about the third video, the third disclosure video in my article, right?
Right. Right.
Okay, but that one, those three, all three came out in 2008. First two were the Bureau of Shock, and then the third one was DNR.
Right. So if we could see it in 2008, then we should have a heck of a better view of it in 2010. So there must be video out there of 2010 that we need to find. Am I correct?
Well, I would tell you that stuff sneaked out, and they no doubt have figured out where the leaks are, and they have plugged those leaks. And they've done a pretty tough job on that. I had one gentleman that's been following my work over the years, and he runs a large merchant network in New Zealand, handles all credit card processing for a lot of folks. And New Zealand's an interesting spot because folks that are going to be going down and working at the South Pole, usually that's their last stop, and that's where they go and they buy their whatever they're going to want to take with them, their supplies, clothing, whatnot. Well, what he was getting was a lot of feedback from his merchants, and they were saying that these people going down were talking about the Americans and very angry with them. They were saying that what was happening is that there were these special C-130s that were coming on nonstop flights from America to Antarctica. So we're talking about mid-air refuelings and multiple crews. And they would come in. Teams would come off, spend about 2 weeks there, not talk to anybody, not discuss anything, just go over to the South Pole Telescope, do their work, and leave. And there was a lot of resentment that they were expressing to these various merchants that they were buying their supplies from there in New Zealand. And so, it's a massive cover-up. I mean, the notion that governments cannot keep secrets is something governments use to make people blow it off. They keep secrets. And I mean, the BP oil spill, the oil spill, was a perfect example of a real-time whitewash. A real-time whitewash. All right. And so we saw that happen right in front of our own eyes. And to say that, you know, with something like that, that we would allow that, say that, well, okay, that kind of malevolence is acceptable at that level, but at this other, of course, you're going to all of a sudden, you know, mysteriously come to your creator and decide you're not going to do it. No, I mean, it's a matter of scale.
Right.
All right.
Now,
welcome.
Now,
you know.
Now, given the timeline. What I'm trying to get to here, Marshall, is given the timeline of when that video was taken to the distance that it needs to travel for it to match 2012-2013, this thing must be moving at an incredible speed. And if so, does it have a force field ahead of it? Does it have debris in front of it? Or is it all its own mass and debris cloud as it travels?
Well, what the current thinking on it is that this is a mini constellation. That's what the SPT disclosure imagery shows us, is that it's a mini constellation. So you have a brown dwarf, which is a small unborn star, a companion to our own sun. Now, this is not a novel idea. Carl Sagan wrote about this in his book Comet. This is introduced by Velikovsky and you know, so this is, and there was a time I can even remember, and possibly can too, when back in the 70s, there was a lot of talk about a nemesis star. It was an interesting concept. You know, a lot of folks were hearing about it in, you know, their high school science classes. Right. And then all of a sudden, that whole dialogue was shut down. I mean, it was shut down.
Right. Very good point.
So, you know, this stuff has, and there's a lot of suppression people don't realize. For example, back around 2000, NASA implemented a suppression policy on near-Earth object first sightings. Now, think back to the 1990s, all right, and particularly the English tabloids. They were the most egregious, the big headlines. Asteroid could hit Earth in 20 years and everyone dies, right?
Right.
Well, this stuff was great. It would sell newspapers like nobody's business. And so these really savvy journalists that were just out to, you know, the fearmongers, the yellow journalists, they were going out and they're looking at what was being said amongst astronomers, and they're reporting to each other their observations and sighting and saying, okay, I'm seeing something here. It's a potential, it's a near-Earth object, an NEO, with a potential Earth-crossing orbit, which means, you know, hey, we could have an impact event.
Right.
And then what astronomers do at that point is once they've located this object, they make as many additional sightings, observations of it as they can. And then this, the more you observe it, the more reliable your estimates become. And what they inevitably find is that maybe something could, there's a remote chance it could hit the Earth, but the more they analyze it, they realize, well, close but no cigar, it's going to fly by. Right. Well, back in the 1990s, we had a lot of these headlines, sold a heck of a lot of newspapers. Everybody was cashing in on it, because the minute the asteroid hits the Earth, everybody take that right off the newsstand. Well, after 2000, what happens? And think about it. How many times have you heard them announce, 3 days ago, an asteroid came really close to the Earth? 5 days ago, an asteroid came close to the Earth. Okay?
And you think that's the manipulation of media and government?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The guy that told me was Dr. Brian Marsden of the Smithsonian Astrophysics Lab. Marsden is the go-to guy if you find a rock and want to slap a name on it. Okay?
Right.
And I was on the phone talking with him. We were working on some other TV show together and batting some ideas, and he brought it up in the conversation, and he was livid. Because it was a real suppression of a very, successful scientific process. And NASA, having implemented this thing, has really throttled this kind of research, okay, because it was politically expedient. So if they've had a decade of doing this kind of suppression, they can hide anything.
Right.
The next time you hear them say, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, 5 days ago, okay? Think back to after the first shuttle disaster, all right? And NASA was on its back. And finally, they started doing the shuttle flights again. And throughout the 80s, what were we hearing time and time again? Another successful launch of the space shuttle with an undisclosed military payload. We heard that mantra time and time again. Another successful launch of the shuttle with an undisclosed military payload.
Right.
So the cover-up is there. But what's the point of talking about it if people wink and nod and go, well, I'm good with it, because I'm pulling the covers over my head, and as long as I do that, the monsters can't see me, and if they can't see me, they can't get me. Whoopee!
Yeah. Well, whatever those payloads were would be time for another show, I think, because, is it possible that Barack Obama was briefed on the reality of what's to befall the Earth if there is a close flyby? Do you think that's why he may have tried to change the direction of NASA to, I think he said something like to be able to land a man on a meteorite or land a man on a comet or something of that nature. Do you think that's why he twisted in that direction after he became president?
Well, I just would say look at the health bill that they passed, all right? This legislation doesn't really do anything for anybody significant. Well, there's a few givies for folks with kids. That's always an easy thing to look the other way for a special interest, I suppose. But nothing really material of substance happens for people with all this big legislation, this monstrous huge bill that's being challenged by several states now, until 2014, well after these events are going to happen. So what is in place before 2014? What is in place before 2014, A, are the revenue mechanisms. What they have done with this is that they have given the insurance companies a free hand to do whatever they want, and that's what they're doing. They can milk small businesses and individuals for everything they're worth, because they're now protected by federal law to do that. There is no control on...
And the money stream would be used for what?
Money stream is going to the elites. Again, I go back to the movie 2012. How do you pay 1 billion euros for a seat in an ark? Okay? That's where the money's going. They're siphoning it out. The whole thing that Barack Obama put together, maybe he wanted to do health care because he made a promise when he first started doing it. It was really a genuine thing. But I think what happened was once he got into it, it was they said, well, this is what we're going to give you. And that was it. And then the deal was he probably just, you know, finally just took it. And now if you look at what they're doing with legislation, the way we're going at things, we're spending money at a reckless pace, all right? And we're burning through whatever's left of the economy. We're running on a ragged edge.
Are they doing that though? Are they doing that because they know 2012 is basically the end of the financial economy? Are they doing that knowingly?
Yes.
In that direction.
They're riding the tit.
Right.
Okay. They're just milking it.
Yeah.
They're milking everybody and everything they can for as much as they can get their hands on. And everybody's getting themselves positioned.
For a seat on the arts.
But for seats on the arts. Or whatever. I mean, whatever their plans are. They have advanced knowledge. And they're going to position themselves so that, first and foremost, they maintain their control.
Right. And speaking
command
of maintaining
and control.
Speaking of maintaining control, we're down to the last 3 minutes. Marshall, it's been an absolute pleasure. The Colburn Bible, God's Child Covenants, Planet X Forecast, the 2012 Survival Guide, and you're at YOWUSA.com.
Yes.
And they can look at the videos up there.
Right. The video links will be there, and so it's a good place to start. And for the folks that are out there that are coming into awareness, I want to have a special message to you. The one thing I want you to remember about anything I've said in this interview is this. You are not alone. That's the most important thing I want you to know.
Yeah.
You are part of something that is viral, vibrant, powerful, and I see it, and it fills me with hope for the future. So don't give up. Just don't give up.
Excellent. Marshall Masters, thank you very much, sir. As usual, an absolute pleasure. You take me in places I didn't want to go, but it's always fascinating.
Okay.
Take care of yourself, Marshall. Take care of yourself.
You too.
Ladies and gentlemen, Marshall Masters from the Planet X Forecast, probably one of the most in-depth checks you could ever make regarding Planet X. Some fascinating stuff up there. Marshall has a YouTube account and lots of free YouTube videos. You go and have a look at the YouTube videos and you get a better understanding of this theory of Planet X on Nibiru and the Anunnaki and the Sumatrans and all of that. Now, I do invite you to also look back into our archives for Tim McHyde and Bible Prophecies. Some very interesting stuff there that ties in with what's happening in the next couple of years. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. 90-minute special on a Thursday night. We will be back into our normal time slot starting next Tuesday. And then, in the meantime, in between time, that's it, that's all. Another edition of the Night Zone. Good night. Hey, Night Zoners, got a minute? I'm sure we all know someone who is experiencing difficult times during this recession, either with unemployment or financial problems, or in relationships. I have friends like that. I would like to remind you that we are all in this together. So if you have friends experiencing hardships, support them with your advice. If you have acquaintances who are having rough times, nurture them with your friendship. Show them kindness. If you have family members who are having difficulties, show them your love. And if you have people in your life who have almost given up, throw them a lifeline of kindness.
Remember the golden rule. But for the grace of God, go I. Blessings upon your household. Until then, next time we meet.
This has been a Night Zone production in association with BlogTalkRadio.com.